Welcome to Churches Planting Churches, a podcast on the theology and practice of church planting. I'm your host, Tony Morita. The call of Christ is not an invitation to an easy life. As Dietrich Bonhoeffer once said, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. But we know from the words of Jesus himself that we actually find our lives when we lose them for his sake. One of the ways in which Christ calls his people to die to themselves is to cross cultures for the sake of the gospel. Ask anyone who's done this and they will tell you that it is costly. We often don't realize just how much we must die to ourselves until we are in a culture where no one else is like us. And if we want to reach those who are not like us with the gospel, we will need to die to ourselves in more ways than we can imagine. But the call of Christ to come and die, especially in the context of cross-cultural missions, is oh so worth it. Some cultures have spent thousands of years in the grips of idol worship, and we have the only message that can save. That's what cross-cultural church planting is about, penetrating cultural strongholds with the good news of the gospel. We have the best news in all the world, and it's the only news that can save sinners who are headed for destruction. So the cost is high, and those considering going to the nations with the gospel should count the cost before they go. But if you should choose to join the thousands of gospel workers who have gone before you, the unnamed of whom the world is not worthy, you will be participating in the most glorious lasting work in the world. Today we have the privilege of having Jay Bauman on the podcast. Jay is an American brother who has lived in Brazil for the last 8 years. He's planted a couple of churches in Brazil, and he's involved in other work there as well. Jay also serves as the director for Acts 29 Latin America. Jay, welcome to the podcast.
Well, it's great to be here.
Now, tell us a little bit about yourself, Jay. Where did you grow up? Your background? How did you become a Christian?
Well, I grew up actually in Wisconsin, so kind of Midwestern boy. Grew up basically on a farm. My dad was a teacher, hardworking guy, you know, wrestling coach. So my background's kind of typical sort of Midwestern background. And by the grace of God, I became a Christian at a fairly young age. My parents actually were Lutherans. I remember kind of going through all the confessions and learning about everything Martin Luther had to say. but yeah, so that's a little bit about me.
Awesome. So Wisconsin to Brazil, that is quite a leap, man. How did you get to Brazil? Is it true you met your wife on a blind date in Brazil? And if so, how did you get from Wisconsin to Brazil?
Yeah, well, actually what happened was I was with kind of some people from Spanish River Church. David Nicholas, as you know, was kind of the co-founder of Acts 29, and they took a group down to Rio to do some church planting conferences, and I was teaching at a conference, and I got married a little later in life. I was the only single among all the other, you know, pastors, and one of the pastor's wives in Brazil basically just kind of set me up with a Brazilian attorney. And so we ended up going to a churrascaria, which is like a Brazilian steakhouse. And all of a sudden, my seat was next to her seat. And that was kind of the beginning of our relationship. So it was a little bit maybe more forced than we would have expected. But now, you know, several years later, I'm very thankful for that setup.
Wow. So a Brazilian attorney you met at a Brazilian steakhouse. It doesn't get a whole lot better than that, bro. You're making a lot of guys envious out there.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the Brazilian steakhouses are better even than the ones in the States. So it was a great meal and great company, that's for sure.
Now, you've been in the 829 family for a long time, is that correct?
Yes.
Talk to us about some changes you've seen. What are your thoughts now?
I'm so thankful for where Acts 29 has come. It's really, really so significant. The 2.0 of Acts 29 and eventually what we're going to see with 3.0. But, you know, I was a part of the early days. I remember sitting at tables with some of our founders and some of the key guys. And obviously I worked with Chan for 8 or 9 years before moving to Brazil. And it's just great to see the evolution and the maturity of our network, especially moving more global. That for me has been fantastic under the leadership of Steve Timmons and of course Chandler. And really, you know, one of the difficult things for me was when we first came down to Brazil, we didn't really have a plan overseas. It was kind of like, you know, basically who Mars Hill or other churches that were key churches wanted to partner with became our global partners. And right now, it's just so much more diverse. It's just really excellent to see what the Lord has done through the expansion of the networks, of the six networks outside of the U.S. And so just really thankful for that. The diversity initiative, the focus on you know, the urban poor, the focus on just reaching the nations. It's just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. What is the best and worst thing about living in Brazil for you?
I think there's a lot that's good, and quite frankly, there's a lot that's not good. I think the best thing about Brazil is just the people. They're passionate about everything. They're fun. They're generally a loving people. There are people that have to overcome a lot of difficulties because of just the way the culture is and the cities are. The worst thing is probably the violence. We are one of the most violent countries in the world. And so I'm living in a city where there's just a constant threat of violence. I mean, we even have apps on our iPhone to show us where the current shootings are in our own city. In Rio, there's a shootout every 50 minutes. Police brutality and violence is, you know, 100 times worse than it is in the States, and that's not an exaggeration. Not that it's good anywhere, but there's all those kinds of issues that are related to violence and also corruption, which is typical in Latin America. But it really ends up making life very difficult for people when it comes to corruption entering all the cultural domains, whether it's justice, whether it's education, whether it's you know, industry, and obviously it ends up coming into the church as well. And so that's problematic.
Talk to us about the state of the church in Brazil. Before we talk about your church planting experience, how would you characterize it?
Well, I would say the Brazilian church is sort of like a sleeping giant. The Brazilian church is very large. I think probably most of us in the States don't really have an idea of how large the Brazilian church is. It may even be that there's more evangelicals in Brazil than there are in the States, but it's growing. It's actually more mature than you would think. In terms of Latin American countries, I think it's the most mature in terms of institutions, in terms of publishers, in terms of seminaries. But unfortunately, like most of Latin America and parts of Africa, there's a significant problem with prosperity theology. And so that ends up impacting a lot of the churches. And we're not just talking prosperity light or just kind of self-help oriented preaching. We're talking a level that's even unseen in most of the States. There's also a lot of spiritism that enters into the church, a lot of syncretism, mysticism. Really, if you understand the culture of Brazil, when the Portuguese brought over the slaves, and actually Rio was one of the largest slave ports in the West. When they brought over the slaves were actually forced to embrace Catholicism, but they all didn't want to. And so oftentimes they would put like little idols behind the Catholic icons, and they would pretend that they were worshiping the idols, but they're actually worshiping the icons. And so that actually ended up being sort of a good picture of what Brazilian spirituality is. For the vast majority, it's kind of a Catholic soul, but mixed with a lot of spiritism, mysticism, syncretism. And so therefore, the Pentecostal movements over the past 30 years, which have grown rapidly, have had a tendency to attract Brazilians that are pursuing more of an evangelical faith, but kind of want the sort of the supernatural element of it, which is why the Assemblies of God, for example, has been a classic example of one of the fastest growing movements in the history of evangelicalism, at least in the West, over the course of the past 30 or 40 years here in Brazil. So the state of the church is, it's kind of like the States. There's some really good things happening and a lot of not so good things happening. We have some of the same challenges with sort of liberal and progressive ideologies kind of entering the church. And then we also have some challenges of some brothers that kind of want to separate too much and maybe go ultra fundamentalist, which isn't always the best way to dialogue with culture. So in some ways, it kind of mirrors the States from that perspective.
Mm. Man, that is an excellent background. So into that context of prosperity gospel, syncretism, mysticism, you sought to plant a church. Can you tell us about that story? When did you get into the project and What's it like now?
Yeah, so we are actually celebrating 5 years of our church plant, Igreja de Redentor, which is Redeemer Church Rio. This weekend, we're actually celebrating 5 years, which is exciting. One of the reasons I wanted to plant a church is I just felt like there weren't a lot of models for healthy churches, at least in my area of Rio. And I also felt like it would be a challenge for a foreigner to plant a church here. And I know sometimes there's some people that may think, wow, you got kind of a, you know, an American or a white guy planting a church in Brazil. But I think in the same way that it's okay for, you know, Brazilian to plant a church in Miami or Australian in New York, it shouldn't be wrong for a foreigner to plant a church in Brazil. So we've done that and we've got some good traction by God's grace. We're actually, by God's grace, hopefully going to be starting a church planting movement that's just related to our local church, not even related more to our work with Restore in Acts 29. But some of the challenges are obviously language. I mean, when I first started this church plant, my Portuguese wasn't up to par. So I kind of wonder why even people came back, to be honest, the following week, because it wasn't all that good. Another challenge is I'm planting sort of in an upper class area. So if you kind of imagine planting in an upper class area of LA or Miami or something like that, there's similar characteristics. So there's a little bit of challenge of kind of figuring out how to dialogue with the culture. A lot of the upper class in Brazil is kind of turned off because they see the primary view of evangelicals. They're primarily poor that tend to have preachers that kind of prey upon the poor. And so that's your view of pastors and preachers. And so we kind of have to overcome some of that challenge, which is not that much different than in the States in certain elements. And then one of the biggest other challenges is contextualization. I mean, for me, I'm basically a minority wherever I go. And so that's been really good for me because it helps me to understand, helps me to empathize, helps me to understand what it's like to be, not the main guy in the room in terms of a dominant culture. That's been so helpful. And it really helps me, even when I go back to the States, kind of come from a position of learning and a posture of learning instead of just sort of feeling like I know what's going on. One of the other challenges I would say is this: as a missionary, you're either on the margins or you're in the spotlight. And so there's a moment where sort of the red carpet's laid out for you and it's kind of like you're the man, and there's other moments where people don't want to have much to do with you. And so you have to kind of learn to walk in both of those areas, and you have to learn to make sure that, you know, when everyone's looking at you, it doesn't get to your head, and then when you're on the margins that you don't feel like, it's time to give up, if that makes sense.
You started preaching in Portuguese, right? You didn't start preaching in English. What was that experience like? What was the language process like for you, learning it and being fluent in it?
Well, I wanted to take it real seriously because I felt like preaching is sort of one of the highest expressions of using a language. And so I knew that if I was going to communicate in Brazil, I need to speak Portuguese. Brazil is a little different than India or China or other emerging countries where you can get around with English. You really can't hear. So even in Rio, even though it's a global city, you really can't get around very much with it, except for in Zona Sul and some of the wealthy areas. So I wanted to learn it. So at the beginning, I set out to have a tutor 3 times a week, hour and a half per day. And I did that for the first year and a half. I'm constantly refining my messages, constantly even practicing messages out loud. Obviously, having a Brazilian wife helps. The primary language in my home is Portuguese. It's primarily what we speak with our girls, although recently we've been doing more English just to make sure that they have both languages. But by God's grace, I would say after about year four, I became fluent to the degree that I could preach, although not that well, to be honest with you. And probably over the course of the past 2 years, it started to flow now where I can preach more extemporaneously. And so that's been helpful and necessary. I'm not sure I'm ever going to be one of the best preachers in Portuguese, but at least I'm competent enough by God's grace.
Well, you've hit on one of the issues that is obviously a major challenge that causes you to die to self, I think, that is learning a language, assimilating into a culture. What is that like as guys out there listening to the podcast, potentially moving somewhere, doing cross-cultural evangelism, church planting? Just talk to us personally. What were some of the personal sacrifices in addition to what you've already said?
Well, I think the first, again, and not to repeat, but I think the first is to understand that you're a student of the culture. Just like any missionary, you need to contextualize, you need to embrace the culture. And really become, in some senses, one with the culture to the degree that it makes sense. But in terms of the language, I would just say you have to be a student. You have to learn grammar. You know, 1 or 2 year stints are great. And I know a lot of missions organizations focus on those, but really in order to have an impact, in order to kind of be productive, and I don't want to sound too sort of, you know, crass, but you really need to have several years in a culture. We really thought we were going to be able to do a lot by year 2 or 3. We didn't. But by the time we got to year 5 or 6, we were actually quite surprised with what the Lord had done. And so I just think really sticking to it, focusing, saying, I'm in this for the long haul, giving yourself to a country, giving yourself to a people, not just kind of turning around after 2 or 3 years. I'm not saying that's wrong, but what ends up happening oftentimes is it becomes more of a life experience, which is okay because it can shape you. But I think if you really want to end up shaping and impacting people, it's just going to take more time.
What do you miss most about America?
Oh, brother, there's a lot of things I miss. Don't even get me started. But you know, I would say this may sound a little shallow, but I would say food. I miss, you know, Indian food, Mexican food, Thai food, Vietnamese food. It's hard to come by here. And I know that's a little shallow again. But the second, probably more importantly, security. We are living in a city where, you know, I don't drive with my windows down. And you know, there's a high level of security in the schools and the buildings that where we're at. I can't take my family to a park very easily unless it's in certain hours and certain time frames. You got to be careful where you're driving all the time. You know, there's all kinds of violence, even in my neighborhood. By God's grace, we've gone almost 9 years and we've been safe, but we really are kind of the exception. The worst thing that's happened to me is my bike's been stolen. But so security is an issue. And the third thing probably, and final thing I'd mention is just opportunity for my family, my kids. There are definitely sacrifices that we have to make in terms of quality of education, in terms of arts and music and sports. And as they grow, that becomes a little bit more difficult. But as I always tell my wife, who's frequently ready to go back to the States whenever I'd like, I always remind her that, you know, we didn't become missionaries in terms of for quality of life, but because the Lord had really called us here. And so although there's sacrifices, there's so much more that we feel like we're able to reap as a result of the choice that the Lord has led us to make.
That's good, brother. What's it like trying to raise up leaders in a cross-cultural setting? You've talked about the challenge of preaching. What's leadership development like?
Well, leadership development can be challenging here. You know, really what Restore Brazil does, which is sort of an arm of Acts 29, if that makes sense, because it was our ministry that we started before 829 arrived in Brazil. Really what we end up doing is primarily focusing on elements that those of us as Americans can bring that are helpful. And so sometimes it's organizational elements, that sometimes it's leadership. Sometimes it does relate to communication or contextualization. I try to really focus on our strengths and equip the guys in terms of our strengths. I learn a lot from them. I learn a lot in terms of, for example, what it means to preach with passion. Probably a better way to talk about leadership development is this. We have about 35 events throughout the year in 5 different cities. And so our main focus is leadership, preaching, church planting training, revitalization training, all those kinds of things. We also have 2 church planting residencies, and we're starting a third where we're investing in about 20 guys through those 2 residencies that'll plant 10 churches over the course, well, actually 10 churches each residency over the course of 2 years. And then we have 4 church planting intensives, which are kind of like the old Acts 29 boot camps, and we're doing those in 4 cities. So we've got about 35 events throughout the year. By God's grace, we've been able to really wrap in a number of key Brazilian leaders into these events and movements. And so we've got a good footprint. And by God's grace, at this point, I can call up almost any leading Brazilian preacher or theologian and in terms of sort of the Reformed Gospel Center world, and they'd be more than happy to speak at one of our events. And that didn't come overnight, but God's been very gracious and given us great favor, probably more than we even deserve in the area of just pastoral leaders, or sorry, leadership development and pastoral training.
Mm. Man, that's really exciting. These events that you've been doing, are you seeing like a range in age? You seeing a lot of young guys come up? Like I'm sure it's different from event to event, but what is the general pulse?
Yeah, there's a lot of young guys. If you imagine sort of the reform resurgence that we had, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, forgive me for using the word resurgence, but I'm just kidding. But the reform sort of, resurgence, really, interest in reform theology, gospel-centered theology, that's really arrived in Brazil primarily over the past 5 to 7 years. And so one of the cool things about this is that we're at the beginning of sort of a movement that has the capacity to really shape the future of the Brazilian church. And that's actually happening, and I'm very encouraged by that. So it's not uncommon for guys from Pentecostal or Assembly of God churches or Baptist churches or churches that maybe wouldn't identify as Reformed to engage in our events. And so it's very common. As a matter of fact, we tend to attract that group that's more independent. And also the Presbyterian Church is real strong in Brazil. It's more conservative theologically. So we're seeing a lot of good movement of that. About almost half of the Acts 29 churches in Brazil are Presbyterian. It's really cool to see that happening. So I think what we can do is we can learn from the mistakes of our brothers in the States over the past 20 years and a lot of the good things that happened, but some of the issues that we have with arrogance and with sort of not coming from a humble position and sort of, you know, let's say exerting our liberties or sort of showcasing our liberties too much. I think we've learned from that. And so hopefully that's helping the Brazilian church learn from the States and have a little bit more of a humble posture as it comes to preaching and teaching more theologically sound messages and planting and revitalizing more theologically sound churches.
So you are the director for Acts 29 Latin America, right? That's a big group, huh?
It is, brother. And I, you know, honestly, Francisco, my brother in Guatemala, is really taking care of more of the Spanish speaking. You know, I try to help him out with some of the countries here in the southern cone of South America, such as Chile and Argentina. But by and large, I mean, he's got the rest, which I actually think is more complex than what I have in Brazil. Although Brazil technically is half of South America. So it's a country of about 200 million people. And so people don't understand. I mean, not they don't understand, but Portuguese is actually a pretty commonly spoken language in the world, more than most of the European languages. I think we're the sixth largest language, and it's spoken not only in Brazil, but also in about six different African countries. So it's very useful. And so we're even looking forward to going to Africa and hopefully going to places like Mozambique and other countries and hopefully, you know, doing what we can to serve those in even tougher contexts in some cases through the Portuguese-speaking language, or the Portuguese language, sorry.
So, Jay, you're obviously a busy guy. Pastor, you are a husband. You have how many kids?
Got two girls.
Okay. Dad of two. You direct Latin America, Acts 29. What is your rhythm like? When do you sleep? Like, can you walk us through like a week?
Sure. And I didn't mention also that I'm pastoring a church that's geared towards expats, which is called Union Church. And so we've got people from about 10 different nations. So I preach in the morning in English and I preach in the evening in Portuguese. But to share a little bit about my week, I like the beach. By God's grace, we live pretty much on the beach, my family and I. So I'm able to run along the beach. You know, I try to have an active life. Rio culture is a lot about, you know, exercise. It's a lot about, you know, for better or for worse, image. And so I just try to fit into culture, not in sort of a, you know, selfish or egotistical sort of manner. And so I enjoy those things. So I really make sure I get some downtime in terms of beach or you know, exercise. But a typical week is Monday through Thursday working hard trying to divide between these four different areas, Acts 29, Restore Brazil, and the two churches. And then Friday off, usually beach day, sometimes surfing. And then Saturday, more family day, being that the girls are out of school. And then Sunday, the two services and a lot of preparation. And so, but I really try to build in some rhythms where we have good community time. Sometimes we'll visit community groups. Sometimes we'll have people over to the home. You know, Brazilians love community. They love to be together. Sundays are big times to be together. It's not like rush home and watch football. It's more like stay together all day until 5 o'clock when obviously soccer comes on and everything stops. but yeah, so that's a little bit about the rhythm that I've got every week.
It's awesome, man. Now, this is not an American podcast, you know, we're a global, diverse family, but we do have a lot of American listeners. But could you use more help in Brazil? If so, either guys here in the States or guys elsewhere around the world, you want to make a little pitch to them if you have any needs out there?
Well, I would say this, Tony. I'd say that there's really two pitches I'd like to make. One pitch, obviously, locally here in Rio and in Brazil, we're always in need of men and women who are interested in serving. We've got a couple. I didn't create a missions agency here because it just wasn't what the Lord called me to do. I really try to work more with nationals and indigenous. And so almost everyone that we work with is Brazilian, with the exception of two people. But we still could use more people down here that could serve. But I think beyond Restore Brazil in Acts 29, I think what's an important message to communicate to those that would be interested in moving overseas is, you know, we need more good men overseas. And when I say good men, I mean women as well. But we need to see some of our best go over to global cities in particular, to not be afraid, to do the hard work of contextualization, of learning the language in some instances. You know, there's a lot of emphasis, and it was right with Keller and the city center movement. But I'm not certain that really was gave an impulse to foreign missions. And so we had a lot of guys, especially in the 90s and perhaps the early part of the 2000s, moving to center cities and planting churches. But we haven't seen that to the degree that's necessary overseas. And so I'd love to see more guys planting churches and engaging in movements and overseas. And I think it's great to say, hey, well, we want the national leaders to do it. And that's great. But there's no reason that we can't come alongside of them. There's no reason. Oftentimes, you know, like it or not, when you in certain cultures, and not in every culture, but in certain cultures, there's still some positive things about being an American. There's still some positive things about walking into a room and communicating as an American. And so I'm not sure it's always going to be that way, but that's the way it is right now in certain cultures. And so Brazil is one of those cultures where they're generally open. So I think we can use that to our advantage and we can reach more people. And I would also say that as it relates to just going overseas, it helps us in terms of our even our diversity initiatives, because really one of the overlooked ways for churches to become more diverse or to think beyond themselves or to have people who are maybe more monolithic or monocultural understand diversity is for them to do short, mid, and long-term missions. I think there's no teacher on diversity like missions. And so I think sometimes we overlook that. And so as we're looking towards more of creating multicultural churches, it just kind of becomes natural with people who have had experience overseas. And I'm certain there's some exceptions to that. But so my heart really it beats for people who want to go to global cities and plant churches, and I want to support them however I can. And so it's great to see that some churches are doing that, that they're engaging in that, and not just sending those kind of weird people who don't fit in overseas, to be honest with you. But and that's okay, because some of them God's calling, but also to say, hey, let's send some of our best. Let's send some of those, the best guys we have overseas, that we know are going to be able to even lead or at least to facilitate gospel movement.
I love that. Great pitch, Jay. Man, thanks so much for being on the podcast with us. You're an encouraging brother. Every time I'm around you, I'm encouraged, and love hearing your journey, your thoughtfulness, humility. So again, man, just thanks for making some time to be with us. We pray that the Lord would bless your work there in 2018, big time.
Thanks, Tony. As always, I'm a big fan of Acts 29 and also of you and your work as well in North Carolina. So thanks for the opportunity.